Politico Report is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
Eco Report is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
And financially supported by listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to Eco Report. For WFHB, I'm David Lyman.
And I'm Juliana Daly. Today in our feature, Indiana Environmental Report, reporter Beth Edwards speaks about Goshen, Indiana, addressing climate change.
That's coming up later in the program. But first, your environmental headlines. Nestle's water proposal to take 1 million gallons per day from Ginny Springs in Florida, near Gainesville, has drawn a backlash from conservationists who say the food giant wants to take publicly owned water and sell it back to the public, as The Guardian reported. Conservationists fear that if Nestle's plans go through, there will be considerably less water in Ginny Springs, which sits in the Santa Fe River and serves as a home for several species of turtles that nest on the river's banks. Environmental groups say the river is too fragile to serve Nestle's interests since it is already labeled as in recovery by the Suwannee River Water Management District after years of overpumping, as The Guardian reported. Virtually all of Florida's freshwater supply must be guarded carefully because this is karst country. Thus, Florida counts on rains trickling down through the limestone quickly to displace any seawater. Ginny Springs is approximately 50 feet above sea level, so the water supply is safer than in Miami, which averages 10 feet above sea level. Miami pumps waters from the aquifer, but also needs 39 desalination plants to supply its needs.
The U.S. Senate has an opportunity to permanently ban oil and gas leasing and pre-leasing along Florida's Gulf Coast. The U.S. House of Representatives recently passed H.R. 205, the Protecting and Securing Florida's Coastline Act, and the Senate can do the same. The Senate can support this legislation and vote in favor of a ban on offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, thus protecting the Gulf from future oil spills. Marine wildlife and coastal human communities are still suffering from the catastrophic 2010 Deepwater Horizon spill in the Gulf of Mexico. Another ecological disaster from offshore drilling would be too much for this fragile ecosystem to bear. The oil from the Deepwater Horizon disaster is still killing small turtles, seabirds, and fish. Marine wildlife are poisoned by inevitably inhaling and ingesting the toxic spilled crude oil. Banning offshore drilling would obviate those problems in the future.
Okay, the area of toilets is flush with new developments. The incentive for new toilets is that billions of people do not have water for toilets and are not connected to a sewer system. There have been many potential solutions. One of these was recently touted by Bill Gates. For Gates, toilets are serious business. The billionaire philanthropist kicked off the reinvented toilet expo in China and unveiled a new toilet that does not require water or sewers, but uses chemicals to turn human waste into fertilizer, Reuters reported. Gates points out that more than half the world's population doesn't have the safe sanitation they need to lead healthy and productive lives. One concept takes the solids to an area within the toilet where they are incinerated to ash. The power for this can come from solar panels. The liquid portion is passed through filters and stored in a small tank. This water should not be consumed, but it is suitable for fertilizer.
According to a new report in The Lancet, one of the world's oldest and most prestigious medical journals, climate disruption is affecting public health today, and children are especially vulnerable. Infants born today will face a lifetime of health problems related to the climate crisis, and efforts to address those problems are insufficient. The report Countdown, Tracking Progress on Health and Climate Change, says that the health impacts begin before birth with an increased risk of low birth weight and neonatal death. Climate disruption continues in children with possible lung problems, asthma, and insect-borne diseases. The elderly will become increasingly vulnerable from extreme heat. The report found that the benefits of climate action in the U.S. varied by region. However, the health savings from action on renewable energy in the Rust Belt surpassed the cost of the action by 34%. If current emissions continue as is, children, especially children of color, will face billions of dollars in health-related costs throughout their lives.
Greta Thunberg, the teenage climate activist whose weekly school strikes have spurred global demonstrations, has cut short her tour of the Americas and set sail for Europe to attend the COP25 in Madrid next month, as the New York Times reported. Thunberg's original itinerary for the Americas was bookended by the UN Climate Conference in New York in September and the UN-sponsored COP25 in Santiago, Chile in December. Thunberg has traveled around the U.S. and Canada, mainly by boat and by electric car borrowed from Arnold Schwarzenegger, according to The Guardian. She was supposed to start making her way towards Chile by boat and by bus, wandering her way through South America, according to the New York Times. However, after a large-scale protest broke out over income inequality and paralyzed Chile's capital for 2 weeks, Chile's president canceled the COP25. Madrid stepped in as the new host of the conference, leaving Thunberg stranded. The Nobel Peace Prize finalist turned to social media for help. Thunberg needed to make other arrangements and ultimately left under sail. She left the U.S. from Hampton, Virginia last Wednesday morning with an Australian family sailing on a 48-foot catamaran. Thunberg refuses to fly because of the tremendous carbon footprint associated with air travel. One round-trip flight from New York to California emits 20% of the greenhouse gases a typical car emits in a year, according to numbers from the EPA. In Europe, Thunberg usually travels by train. She said before leaving, as the New York Times reported, quote, "I decided to sail to highlight the fact that you can't live sustainably in today's society. You have to go to the extreme," unquote.
The Earth is becoming more crowded, and the climate is changing. One of the consequences, as forecast by many experts, is the mass extinction of species. It's being called the sixth, or Anthropocene, mass extinction. It forecasts that 1 million plants and animal species will go extinct. A question addressed here is, how long will it take for the evolution of new species? There have been 5 mass extinctions previously, all occurred millions of years ago before humans. Their causes are varied. An early one was caused by freshly exposed silicates absorbing most of the atmospheric CO2, causing an intense cooling and a glacial age. In the most famous mass extinction, the Cretaceous Paleogene, an asteroid impact off the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico, caused fiery debris falling around the globe to set most everything ablaze. This occurred at the same time as a tsunami, some estimate as 1,000 feet high. These events were followed by many years when little sunlight penetrated all the debris in space, which froze the Earth. Only small animals could burrow to survive. The event ended the dinosaur age and brought about our former Cenozoic age, also known as the Age of Mammals.
The mass extinction events have not affected animal and plant numbers equally. Generally, the events have killed off about half. The worst one was the Permian-Triassic extinction event about 250 million years ago, which scientists call the Great Dying, because it wiped out up to 96% of all sea life and 70% of land-based vertebrate species. If the current Anthropocene event results in ending 1 million species, that would make it a relatively shallow extinction. That's because there is estimated to be 6 to 8 million species of plants and animals in total. The current extinction is different than the ones preceding it. This one is attributed to humans. There are so many people on Earth now that there is little space for all the other plants and animals. At least at the beginning of this extinction, it's clear that habitat destruction is the major reason. For example, the Amazon is being burned to create farmable land. Indonesia is burning to clear the land for palm oil production. The list goes on and on. The current extinction rate is estimated by scientists to be 1,000 times the natural rate. This number will increase vastly before 2100 because the dynamics causing extinctions are in place and will determine the climate for a long time.
Down the road, the main mechanism of extinction might switch to climate change. If the ultimate CO2 level goes to some high level, such as 1,000 parts per million, the weather on Earth will not be favorable for hundreds of thousands of plants and animals. The experts are predicting that over 1 million species will become extinct in this mass extinction event. That brings us to the question of how long it will take for the new species to evolve so that there is a recovery of the diversity of life. Determining the time for recovery is very straightforward. What time is required is determined by looking at how long it has taken to recover from previous mass extinctions. The historic record would be a valid indicator, assuming that the human population is small enough to allow other species to develop. If human population remains high, then the time required for new species could be longer. The time for recovery from all five of the previous mass extinction events is around 10 million years. If this mass extinction is shallow, then recovery could be slightly shorter.
And now we will hear IER reporter Beth Edwards speaking about Goshen, Indiana, addressing climate change.
Climate change is happening now, and scientists can prove it with many different forms of data. But many doubtful communities are learning about the realities of climate change the hard way. IER's Beth Edwards spoke to the mayor of a town in northern Indiana who is taking the lead on resiliency and not looking back.
Nestled in the middle of Amish country near the Michigan border, Goshen, Indiana revolves around its town square, where historic brick and stucco buildings sport bright coats of paint and interiors have been transformed into breweries, quirky shops, and artist studios. The town's website has a quote that reflects its hopeful outlook. Some say Goshen is the way America used to be. We say it's the way to an uncommonly robust future. But when historic flooding devastated the town of 32,000 in February of 2018, the prospect of that robust future became less secure. A combination of heavy rain and snow melt led to Elkhart River to rise to a record 13.2 feet. More than 300 structures were damaged, and citizens had to be evacuated by rescue teams. Faced with unprecedented challenges, the town responded on the fly. Its mayor, Jeremy Stutzman, vowed never to put the community in such a precarious position again.
Having the experience of this past hailstorm, where we saw streets flooding that had never ever flooded before in that storm, having the coldest ever winter last year, all of these to me are direct signs that we need to be doing something to prepare for the future, and we are going to have to find ways to be more adaptable.
Goshen lost three of its five river crossings in the first 5 hours of the flood. The water rose with such speed and such volume, evacuations were ordered for residents living in the affected area. It would take 97 hours before the water started to dissipate. Stutzman spent 91 of those hours at City Hall, along with five other town officials, facilitating communications among town departments and meeting residents' needs as quickly as possible. In the aftermath of the flooding, officials saw the financial burden of the flood disasters. Aaron Rowe, Director of Emergency Response and Recovery for the Indiana Department of Homeland Security, said more than 650 applicants in Elkhart County claimed more than $930,000 in emergency assistance. The experience showed town officials that Goshen would need to become more prepared for environmental change and the severe weather that comes with it. Stutzman said the key to encouraging townwide acceptance of the projects was focusing the discussion on the betterment of their community rather than on climate change as a whole.
We didn't argue about climate change. We talked about Goshen. I showed them the numbers. I showed them what we can do, what we know we can do. So as a mayor, you just need to make sure you're giving the argument to allowing everybody to find the argument that allows them to support the initiatives you're bringing forward and really staying out of the politically charged discussions. And it's very important if you're going to continue to get projects moving. Our environment is something that once we lose it, we'll never get back. And there's so many facts we know about environmental projects that, you know, either save us money or help us to be healthier people. That's what we need to be doing and how we need to be acting.
Goshen's plight isn't unique in the Hoosier State. Historically, 24% of Indiana was covered by wetlands, and numerous waterways still cut across the state, making large swaths of land susceptible to severe flooding. And with climate change, Indiana is becoming wetter, with heavy rain events predicted to become more frequent in the coming years. May 2018 to April 2019 was the wettest 12-month period on record in the state. This past spring, heavy rains delayed the planting of crops by many weeks, and residents who had never had to deal with flooding issues found knee-deep water on their streets. These unprecedented levels of flooding have raised fears about Indiana's disaster preparedness, both practically and economically. Concerns about how to recover from and prepare for natural disasters have plagued all levels of Indiana's government. Recently, the Federal Emergency Management Agency announced it is transferring the responsibility of first response to the states so it can focus on preparing for natural disasters before they happen. That shift in priorities will have a significant impact on Indiana. Indiana is one of the few states with a disaster relief fund, which is financed by a percentage of fireworks sales throughout the state. If fireworks sales are down, the fund suffers, meaning that individual citizens are faced with increased responsibility and cost following natural disasters. Last spring, the fund had $2 million. Most homeowner policies do not cover flood damage, and 1% of Indiana residents and businesses have flood insurance. Without it, the recovery cost from a major flood can be substantial. The Indiana Department of Natural Resources works with FEMA to map the river floodplain areas of the state, but this does not include urban flooding, even though urban flooding is covered under the National Flood Insurance Program. And urban flooding is what has been growing the most, with inadequate sewers leading to flooding in homes and businesses, according to David Knight, DNR Engineering Section Manager for the Central Basin.
It is a hazard that's out there, and flood insurance, it's just one tool to have to protect yourself from damages from floods. Pretty much anyone is eligible to purchase flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program. You don't have to be in that special flood hazard area zone. You can be outside of that zone, still at flood risk, and still be protected.
Instead of ignoring any possible relationship between heavy rain events and climate change, Goshen has used the flood disaster as a catalyst for prevention and economic growth. The town is now working with the Great Lakes Integrated Science and Assessment Group to better understand the movement of stormwater through the community and the causes of flooding.
With the flooding we've been through over the last couple of years, this is going to be invaluable information to us. We're very hopeful that it'll help us not only better how we work with developers and projects in the city, but also help us maybe find those ways to start mitigating the flood issues.
Yet another project reaches out to the community's younger residents. My Goshen, Exploring My Natural Home teaches elementary school students about the sense of place, stewardship, energy, and climate change. As part of the program, students will visit the Mary Lee Environmental Learning Center of Goshen College for field experience and grade appropriate activities. Once the program's educational packets are complete, they will be available free of charge on the City of Goshen's website. The city has plans for several additional projects.
For far too long, economics have directed our discussion and lack of action when it comes to our environment. We need to change this direction by showing this economic value and moving forward for green projects.
However, he is conscious of the city's budget and doesn't want to overspend or set up future mayors for failure.
For me, doing an environmental project is great if it helps the environment, but being able to afford it as a mayor is essential. You don't want to spend so much money on green projects that your community can't provide public safety or do snow plowing appropriately. We are always, always looking. Every project we do, we look at the financial aspects. We have so much data, so much research, and technology has come so far. It's becoming easier and easier to do projects that do have that financial payback.
Stutzman grew up in Goshen and went to Butler University in Indianapolis, graduating with a degree in biology. He didn't think he would return to Goshen after graduation and never thought about public service, but he would become the town's youngest mayor. When he returned from Indianapolis, he began working in construction, remodeling and restoring some of the old buildings along the downtown square. That led to a run for city council, which he served on for 8 years before turning his attention to becoming mayor. When he entered office 4 years ago, he started laying the groundwork for Goshen's environmental metamorphosis. He began with small changes, such as having city employees use shared printers and changing two LED light bulbs in government offices. As the smaller projects became more popular and show cost savings, the mayor and his team began thinking of larger projects. One of Sussman's first initiatives was to put a youth advisor on the city council in hopes of getting Goshen's young people involved in the community. Sussman, a father of two, said it was important to him because having a teenage son taught him how thoughtful and insightful young people can be.
When I came in the first year, I knew I wanted to do the youth advisor position and help to bring that youth voice closer to the community, closer to city government. And it has been absolutely phenomenal for our community to go through this.
In fact, because of the success of the city council, several other nonprofit boards in Goshen have appointed youth advisors as well. Goshen High School student Zoe Eichhorn was elected by the student body and appointed to the council by the mayor for the 2019-2020 school year. Eichhorn and fellow youth caucus members helped draft a resolution passed in April in which Goshen pledged to become carbon neutral by 2035. Speaking before the 2019 Earth Charter Climate Leadership Summit held at Goshen College in September, youth caucus member Simon Hertzler-Gosko emphasized the resolution's importance for his generation.
We as youth were all much more connected, I think, to the environment than some of our older peers, and I think it's just the idea that we are the ones that will be affected. So as a caucus, we decided that this is something we were interested in pursuing. The resolution was mainly setting the groundwork for the city council and especially the mayor to pass further legislation in the months to come.
The same resolution also included an initiative to grow the town's tree canopy by 45%. Goshen currently has 13,500 public trees, which offers the community $1.5 million in ecological benefits, comprising of energy savings, stormwater mitigation, carbon dioxide sequestration and mitigation, and benefits to private property.
We are working hard to increase all these values by increasing our tree canopy.
In September, the council passed an ordinance proposed by the Youth Caucus to create a Department of Environmental Resiliency. In the past year, Goshen has also completed 92 solar projects, producing 116 watts per person. That means the town outranks communities like Phoenix, Sacramento, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Denver in the amount of solar power per capita. Sussman said his environmental projects initially were met with a mixture of excitement and skepticism, but people slowly started to get on board.
I don't want to say a battle, but definitely it's been a lot of meetings, sitting down with people to get them on board for the resolution and the ordinance to get them on board for creating a Department of Environmental Resilience. I showed them the numbers. I showed them what we can do, what we know we can do. And with more time to put into that process, that, you know, convince them that we're going to learn a lot more of those types of projects that can help us.
Sussman also spoke in September at the 2019 Earth Charter Climate Leadership Summit. He urged the audience to buy into the necessity of climate change awareness in Indiana.
What do you do if the end of the world comes? The answer? Move to Indiana. Everything happens 50 years later there. We are now at a point where we can't wait 50 years. We must work at becoming a more environmentally resilient state and county. We need to become a state that leads and not follows.
For WFHB, I'm David Lyman.
And I'm Juliana Daly. Support for Eco Report comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli, Bloomington's locally grown co-op grocery since 1976, offering products with a focus on local, fair trade, natural, and organic, with support for farmers, producers, agencies, and artisans. Blooming Foods Market and Deli on East 3rd Street near College Mall, West 6th Street near the Courthouse Square, and Shreve Hall on the Ivy Tech campus.
Are you looking for a way to make a difference on environmental issues? Here at EcoReport, we are currently looking for reporters and segment producers. Our goal is to report facts on how we're all affected by global climate disruption and the ongoing assaults on our air, land, and water. We also celebrate ecologists, tree huggers, soil builders, and an assortment of champions who actively protect and restore our natural world, particularly those who are active in South Central Indiana. All levels of experience and all ages are welcome, and we provide the training you'll need. WFHB also offers internships.
To volunteer for Eco Report, give us a call at 812-323-1200 or email us at earth@wfhb.org.
And now for some upcoming local events. A program titled Endangered Brown County will take place on Friday, November 22nd at 2 p.m. Meet at the Nature Center at Brown County State Park to learn about endangered creatures of Brown County and what you can do to help save them.
You have a volunteer opportunity to participate in the highway cleanup at McCormick's Creek State Park on Saturday, November 23rd from 10 to 11 a.m. Join Friends of McCormick's Creek in making the world and McCormick's Creek a better place. Meet at the Westbrook Shelter to help clean up along the highway.
A Universal Minds field trip sponsored by the Indiana Audubon Society will take place on Saturday, November 23rd from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Take a driving tour of the reclaimed Universal Strip Mines in search of waterfowl, raptors, and sparrows. Located north of Terre Haute, the mine is an important stopover for migrating ducks and geese. Registration is required. Go to the Indiana Audubon website to register.
The Lunch with Nature series at Monroe Lake is scheduled for Monday, November 25th from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. This month's topic is bird tracks and signs. Learn how to look at the myriad clues that birds leave behind. The event will take place at the Paintown State Recreation Area. You will need to register by today at the Indiana DNR website.
Join Tony, the naturalist, at Springmill State Park on Saturday, November 30th from 1 to 2 p.m. for a Donaldson Cave hike. Learn about the eccentric George Donaldson and how his conservation efforts helped give Springmill State Park the old-growth forest. Meet at the inn's front porch.
And that wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's headlines were written by Norm Holey and Linda Green. Today's feature was produced by Patrick Callanan. Juliana Daly compiled our events calendar. David Lyman wrote the script, and Linda Green edited.
Patrick Callanan produced and engineered today's show.
For WFHB, I'm David Lyman.
And I'm Juliana Daly.
And this is Eco Report.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana,
bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.